Ancast is brought to you by RightStuffAnime.com. And there's a Gundam contest on the front page right now. Just go over to Anime News Network, check it out. You can win some Gundam stuff from Right Stuff, DVDs and Blu-rays. Pretty awesome, including the new Zeta Gundam. Go check it out. Let's get to the show. Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in the show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show. Hey everybody, welcome to Ancast. Well, it's that time again. Super nerds need to assemble. Of course, minus Justin. As always, Justin has better things to do. We actually just have terrible timing, but Anime World Order and OtakuUSAMagazine.com's Daryl Surratt is here. Daryl, how's it going?
Hey, how's it going? Great to be back here. We've just celebrated our 10-year milestone of podcasting over on the Anime World Order podcast, and we've still only done not even half of the amount of Ancasts. So, you know, that's good on our work ethic.
You are a quality over quantity show. That's the line I
throw out, and that's what I stick to.
Well, you know what? I sincerely believe that to be true. So, anyway, congratulations on your 10 years of podcasting. That's absurd.
Thank you very much.
Also here, it's Anime News Network's Mike Tool. Mike, how's it going?
Hey, how's it going? I'm always always a pleasure to be on the show.
We haven't had you on since you were the host of a extremely well-received half-hour advertisement for Crunchyroll.
Yeah, shockingly well-received, if you ask me. I was waiting for that thing to blow up in my face and was kind of dumbfounded that it didn't.
Well, that's because it was brilliant, Mike. It was wonderful. I loved it.
Much
that was great.
I watched it again and again.
Good shit, man.
It was a lot of fun to make, and hopefully more opportunities like that come up soon. Who knows?
I cannot imagine that they wouldn't.
I have to say, though, as good as Mike was the host, the show stealer for me was Miles and his TED Talk with his Rei Ayanami body pillow.
It's true.
It was, you know, that was a Rei Hino body pillow, actually, from Sailor Moon.
Oh, that's right. It was not Ava. It was Sailor Moon.
It was the other Rei, but I wrote that TED Talk, but that joke would not have landed without his fine work. He was the star.
Yeah, you needed a Miles type for that joke. Yeah, that was great. The whole thing was great. I was really pleased with it. So hopefully you'll get to do more of that. I'm sure, you know, whatever, if it met whatever their social media metrics awareness were for that, whatever it was, hopefully they'll give you another shout at it.
I'm glad you got to mention on television to the world that Umaru-chan is the Japanese Garfield.
That was very important that we do that. Actually, what I wanted to do was to point out that Umaru-chan was the Japanese Garfield and then cut to a clip of the character with crudely dubbed over voice going, "I hate Mondays." Mm. And the licensor would not approve that.
Yeah, of course they wouldn't.
I could. They let me use the Christmas clip. They let me drop the line, and that was that.
Dang. Yeah. Well, what a shame. Next time, maybe.
Maybe.
Okay, so we should talk about the stuff that we have watched. We won't cover everything from the last 6 months, but Daryl, why don't you let us know what you've been watching lately?
Well, because of deadlines just coming in for the latest issue of Otaku USA, I did have to actually watch something current and ongoing, which I typically don't do because I like to see how things end first before I decide if it's worth my time, aka the Netflix phenomenon. But I've been watching the new Mobile Suit Gundam series, Iron-Blooded Orphans. Mm-hmm. And that is something that I am very pleasantly surprised by, because the last, I would say, almost decade and change worth of Gundam shows has been this sort of illogical roller coaster ride of what's going to happen next. You have no idea. Weren't seeing that coming at the expense of like things making logical sense. And that kind of spread over to the other Sunrise shows. You did your Code Geass podcast, and then that begat like Guilty Crown and all that. Iron-Blooded Orphans is written by Mario Kata. It's very like building logically so far. It can still go off the fucking rails. We know this.
Yeah,
because this is Sunrise we're dealing with,
and
but
it's come very close in recent weeks, where the driving plot line has been a labor dispute.
Yes, that's exactly my point. Like, after episode 13, they're like, okay, now we're doing this, and now you're starting to see some trouble on the edges. It's not the end of it. It hasn't gone off the cliff, but, you know, they gotta get back on the road.
I will say that, as a very minor spoiler, they killed a character recently, and I thought that they did so in the most gloriously telegraphed way.
Yes, I do not appreciate when shows info dump a character's backstory that you haven't seen or heard much about until right before they're killed. Like, this is not Fushigi Yugi. Like, I thought we've moved on beyond this. Apparently not. I think they think, like, oh yeah, this is still a great trick to get sympathy. How about if we had organically learned about this character over time and then had them die? As opposed to, oh, we gotta punch up this scene for, you know, some emotional impact. That one. And then, you know, that's the DC Comics Marvel method, I suppose.
Yeah, I've also been very impressed with the show's Shrinking Violet character, Atra. She's turning into something else. It's pretty cool.
I'm, like, way behind on that show. I've watched 5 or 6 of them, and it's good. You know, I'll probably keep watching it. I think I'll just wait for it to finish and then...
Yeah, I am.
It's one of those things where I would normally wait for it to finish and then start watching because, you know, Gundam 00 is, like, the perfect example of everyone saw, like, that first half, oh, yeah, this is cool. And then it came back after the split season, and it's been no good. I actually can't think of one example where the split season approach has worked. But maybe I'm not thinking.
What you mean, like, so 12 and 12?
Yeah, like, when they've been doing, for example, they do, like, half the show, then the staff goes to work on another show they do the first half of, then they go back to the original show to do the second half and have done taken, like, the feedback and marketing data to retool the second half of the show accordingly. So Gundam 00 is an example because they did the first half of that, then they did the first half of Code Geass. And then they went back to do the second season of 00 and then the second season of Code Geass.
And what you're saying, Daryl, is when they made those second halves, they made them as the product directly of feedback from the first half, really?
It seems that way, anyway, because their second season seems so drastically different than what transpired beforehand that I'm always wondering, like, is that because they had time to sort of stop and take inventory? Had this gone on as one uninterrupted show, would it have been different? I don't know. I'm not inside the Sunrise studio. I can just look at the show and say, well, that was a weird, you know, decision that they started to make.
Yeah, my counterexample would be Fate Zero, which UFO Table took a break on between halves, but you know, that was based on an existing work. So
now, is it UFO Table or UFOtable? Because I always say UFO Table.
I thought it was UFO Table.
UFO Table. Okay.
UFO Table. I don't care how it's pronounced. Who gives a shit?
But
the listeners,
those Tight Moon lunatics who get on your case for every slight, you know, that you dare commit against the glory of, you know, Nasu-sama or whatever.
Isn't there a new Fate this year? Isn't there a Fate show this year or something? Like a movie or TV show or something?
I think it might be a film. It's going to be based on another one of the paths from the game, something.
Okay.
Maybe.
Yep. Buckle up, buttercups.
Yeah. So in addition to that, I have been watching Lupin the Third Part 4, as I refer to it, or the Blue Jacket Lupin. I think you guys have kind of pretty much said all the praise that needs to be said for that one. So far, so good. And it's kind of hard for Lupin to go off this cliff in quality because usually it's standalone episodes. This time it's a serialized story, and I'm not really sure if it's something that's as dependent on, oh, they better stick the landing on this, or else, you know, this season's going to be a waste. It's like, it's Lupin the Third at the end of the day, and I think it's really well done.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that gets in the way of Lupin is, like, you know, bad episodic episodes. So, like, you know, this one 22-minute chunk wasn't particularly interesting. Like, it's kind of the worst thing that Lupin does, you know? So yeah. If that's the only thing that happens with this one is that maybe there's a few boring ones, whatever, you know, it's Lupin, right?
Yeah. It's one of those things that if the episode isn't really catching your attention, you can just tune it out and wait for the next one.
Yeah. Lupin it does function. If this show weren't so gorgeous and I just wanted to sit and stare at it, it does function as background noise, like, really well. Lupin, you can kind of drop in whenever you want. And then, yeah.
It certainly is the best looking Lupin.
Damn.
Isn't it,
in terms no of kidding, just like, man. I feel like absolutely. I just stare at it. I feel like I barely don't pay attention to the stories. I'm just staring at the show. Like, I don't
That's
know.
That's that co-production money right there.
I don't know. I find that art style incredibly appealing. I like more so than I think. I have to overstate how much I like it because it really does appeal to me. That is like the ideal Lupin. Yeah, good show.
Yeah, I mean everything else like the currently running season. It's all like things that are on my list to watch as long as I hear that they didn't shit the bed on the ending. So that's like Erased and Bubuki Baranki. Yeah. I'm like, all right. Maybe those will be good, but I don't want to watch a single episode until your confirmation that it was not a waste of time at the end.
Bubuki Baranki, I'm excited about that because, you know, I mean, I like the CG models, you know, as I've made it very clear. But people really do seem to be cottoning to the story on that one. Like, I've noticed that, like, the readership for those episode reviews is particularly good, you know, and it's got a pretty okay discussion section, which I wasn't really expecting because anime fans, you know, they don't exactly flock to the CG shows.
I wonder what the catalyst for that was. Maybe Sidonia being on Netflix? Who knows?
Maybe. I don't know. All right, anything else?
No, I think that's pretty much covering, like, the most recent set of things that I've been watching anime-wise.
Anything older? What have you been revisiting?
Mostly things for my own podcast, which I'll be reviewing in time. Basically, what happened was I made a critical error in logic in which I said, if people donate, they can tell me what to review. And I said, well, let me just set like some absurd high thing. That way it won't ever happen. And then immediately, guy jumps in. It's like, you, yeah. sir, must now review Initial D. And I'm like, oh, fuck. So,
yeah.
I am watching Initial D, which something I've had a hate relationship with for about 20 years now, but I've never actually codified why. So, in the next episode of my own podcast, I will be reviewing Initial D by demand.
How much of it did you have to watch?
Well, they were actually merciful in that regard. They said, I only need to watch Fourth Stage, which is a very specifically weird request that you only watch that chunk. But it's because among the Initial D fans, that's like the best season of Initial D. So that's probably why they picked it, even though it's not the end. And you have to kind of see a little bit beforehand to understand who these people are, or do you?
Well, depending on how much he paid, I mean, I would have expected you to watch the whole thing.
I thought he was going
to
say, like, yeah. But, I mean, originally when I put up the brackets, I had under the condition that it must be 26 episodes or fewer so that I can actually watch through it in time to get an episode out.
Okay. You put some little rules in there to get out of the real responsibility. I see
exactly.
what happened here.
Yeah. That way it's not like, time to watch all of Gintama and review it. Oh, well, here we go. No, it's a...
That is the flip side, though, of getting paid to watch anime. Suddenly you have responsibility.
No, you have a gun to your head.
That's right.
Right, so you have to come up with little rules and weasel your way out of it.
At least I did it up front as opposed to no take backs.
I'm giving you a hard time, of course. I've seen more than 26 episodes of Initial D, and I don't think I would really, like, make anyone do that. Like, it's... Initial D is kind of
the soundtrack again.
Yeah, the soundtrack is awesome, and the story isn't like it's not like the story's bad. It's just that show hasn't aged very well. I don't know.
It's timeless. That's what I'll say.
Is it?
It's the same now as it was always.
Hate it again for the first time. Yeah.
Interesting.
Mike. So, what have you been checking out?
Well, my current thing that I watch while I'm working out on the elliptical machine is IGPX.
Okay.
And that is interesting to revisit because I never really absorbed it when it was on television. I saw a few episodes of it and kind of checked out because it was a thing to do at the time. I would say that it's a very aspirational show in that it wanted so hard to succeed and it tries to do so many things to get there, but it only occasionally comes together. There are a couple of episodes that are really good. Like the last two episodes of the first season, which I just watched, are like, they're as good as like the mid-season turning point of any decent show. But there's all kinds of weird stuff with it. It kind of has too many characters, yet not enough characters at the same time. the look of the show is hard to really pin down. It's one of those, I want to say it hasn't aged well, but it looks better than I thought it would at the same time.
I've always been so skeptical of IGPX just because, like, after basically the Dirty Pair Project, Eden and Captain Tyler, has Koichi Mashimo ever done anything good? Because whenever I think of some of the most maddening anime shows I've ever seen, they're all often from his hand.
Well, we're not talking about Mashimo's. Mashimo directed the pilot. The TV series is directed by a guy named Mitsuru Hongo,
right?
Who's he's more of
what
a production.
What else has he done? Mostly just an IG guy for life kind of thing.
Yeah, he's one of those IG lifers, but he's definitely worked for other studios as well. I feel like
I'm going to cheat and I'll look him up so you don't have
cheat
to.
Cheat and look him up. I'll make another point while you're looking him up.
Crayon Shinshon, he did a ton of that.
Okay. One of the problems.
Hold on, Mike. Hold on. He's unforgivable, irrevocably disqualified for life. Candidate for goddess director, aka candidate.
Well, that explains
it. It's over. In the trash next to Nico Yazawa.
That explains the Toonami connection. I would say the show's biggest flaw is that it is very slow paced because it concentrates on the three main characters, which isn't a fatal error. But there are six teams of three pilots in that show, and it never gives enough time to the opposing team. And you know that any good sports anime will give some time to the rival to develop the relationship.
Right. Otherwise, of course.
Otherwise, you don't feel like, you know, it's like you want to feel somewhat bittersweet that, hey, they didn't deserve to lose. They were trying just as hard. That's usually better than these guys are the, you know, Cobra Kai or whatever.
Yeah. And like, at the halfway point, IGPX just hasn't done enough of that. Maybe it will towards the end, but not yet.
Yeah, I mean, if you have a sports anime and you don't have fangirls that are rooting for the rival team in your sports anime, you did it wrong.
Yeah. here's another crime of the Mitsuru Hongo, lesser so, but he is in charge of the television adaptation of World Trigger, which is extremely disappointing to me because I greatly love that manga.
Same.
I think maybe more of the blame is on Toei for being exceedingly cheap than him himself.
Man, but, World Trigger, I just had like a visceral cringe reaction to World Trigger.
Yeah,
that first episode, man. Whoo, yeah. That was some.
And the manga is quite good. The manga is really breezy and fun and action-packed. Manga works more like a sports manga than an alien invasion sci-fi thing to me.
Yeah, the author definitely, he wanted to write a sports manga. They told him, no, there's no real market for that. Why don't you make, you know, something with fighting instead, and he kind of got the best of both worlds in there. And so, I greatly enjoy the World Trigger manga and cannot stand to watch the World Trigger anime, which is unfortunate because the majority of the world is going to know about that series from watching the cartoon, not from reading the comic.
Yeah, but ultimately, I'm glad IGPX is available, and it's been interesting to work my way through it. I think it's a really intriguing kind of snapshot of what the boom and bust was like in the mid-2000s. But as to whether or not it's a good series, well, the jury is still out on that one. I'm not quite done with that. Also, today, I watched the new Twilight Time Blu-ray release of the Space Pirate Captain Harlock CG film.
Oh, okay. How was that?
I ended up kind of liking the movie, man.
That's all right. Had you seen it before, or was this your first time?
This was actually my first time, so I never saw the shorter international cut.
Oh. Yeah, I thought it was okay. I mean, it's not like a really bad movie or anything. It's really pretty.
Yeah, in some ways, it's a little maddening for me, but I covered that in my own show.
Yeah. There's lots of kooky, you know, cosmic showdowns and dark matter, you know, pseudoscientific nonsense going on there. But to me, it still has the essence of what makes Harlock good. The only aesthetic thing about it that wasn't working for me was that it was almost all projectile weapons, which means that when Harlock pulls out his Cosmo sword, he's not impaling people on giant lasers, which, you know,
his Cosmo sword is also a gun, at least. So
yeah.
That.
Yeah, they still did the aesthetic where he pulls out the sword and shoots someone through with it, and everyone else is surprised that he did that, even though he does it every time.
I personally thought that movie was the chief thing that movie achieves to me was effectively translating Matsumoto's designs into CG. Like, I didn't really think that would be super possible, but I thought they did a nice job. That movie looks great.
It looks great. I think all my problems are with the script.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, I'm not, I guess, like, to me, I guess it's like, yeah, of course, it's not, it's not going to be like a magical story that I'll remember forever. Like, I'm kind of just there for the visuals, but that's me with a lot of Matsumoto. Like, I love his designs.
Just like,
I could not care less.
To me is like My Youth in Arcadia and SSX and that original Space Pirate Captain Harlock that is finally on DVD here. And so that, in that sense, when we get like this Haratoshi Fukui story that's very like weirdly right wing and, you know, why don't we just blow this all up in the bad way as opposed to the typical Captain Harlock, why don't we just blow everything up way? I think it was just like this mire of a, you know, sea of frustration for me to get through, but it's easily available. A lot of people saw it.
Yeah
The Blu-ray Twilight Time is a boutique film label that they do a lot of rescuing of weird old cult movies, and they kind of have a, you know, cult following in that a lot of their Blu-ray releases are short run, like 2,500 copies, and sell out pretty quickly. And they specifically went into this production saying that they were going to make the most exhaustive version of Harlock of the CG film in the world, and it looks like they did it. It's both the 3D and the 2D version of the film. So if you've got a fancy 3D TV and, 3D glasses, you can watch it in 3D, which I kind of want to do now because the gimme shots where you can tell they animated it for 3D look really good. There's that hook to it. And also there's just the first disc, which I've just been going through, is just loaded with documentaries. There's like a 35-minute promo documentary. There's long interviews with Matsumoto, with Shinji Adamaki, the director, with Fukui, the script writer. There's talk with the actors. There's them going through the motion cap process. It looks like a really good look at, you know, good solid look at the film.
That seems like it would be potentially interesting to me because I hope there's a part where they ask like Shinji Aramaki, so this shower scene, you were like growing up saying like, I need to surpass the Macross. Do you remember Love Zero to shower scene? I got to throw in a sweet backflip. That's kind of the sort of level of introspect I hope is in those supplemental materials.
Yes, I had that thought, but I haven't watched that interview yet. And also, it's a two-disc set. It includes both the full-length 2-hour movie and like the hour and 45-minute long international cut, which is a little shorter and also dubbed in English.
So that's a super exhaustive set.
Yeah.
Then.
Yeah,
which Twilight Time usually does, which is also why their discs are like 40 or 50 bucks.
That was the other thing I was going to say is that they only sell through one or two outlets, and I paid $35 for it, and don't feel ripped off. I think I had a good time watching the movie.
Yeah.
I think it's a good package.
Well, that's also, you would not find it for cheaper, and in that case, if you waited at all, you wouldn't be able to buy it. Period, because Twilight Time does print runs of like two copies. So, I mean, I tried to buy Zardoz from Twilight Time. Let me just say, like, I just said the sentence. I tried to buy Zardoz.
You tried to and couldn't succeed in it. Like, I bought my Zardoz copy on DVD years ago on the regular DVD. And it's like, ooh, John Boorman commentary track. But now there's like the super ultra mega hyper bloody Twilight Time edition. That I'm missing out on.
Yeah, which you can get, but it's out of print, so you're going to pay like $90 for it or something like that.
Exactly.
So, Twilight Time.
Yeah, that is a DVD label where it's like, yep, people buy those just to scalp them 2 years later.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And the last thing that's been on the rewatch list, I watched over the holidays and absolutely loved it, was Turn A Gundam.
Okay. All right, the whole thing?
Yeah, finally available in the United States for the first time, fully subtitled, etc., thanks to Right Stuff, right? Or Nozomi, I guess, is there.
Nozomi Entertainment. When Right Stuff had their kooky holiday sale and both halves of that show went on sale for $25 each, that's when I knew I had to go. It's like $50 for an entire, 50-episode series. Oh, yeah, that's a sweet spot right there. I had to jump on that deal. And the show is consistently excellent enough that, like, it was one of those shows that I would seriously sit down to watch two or three episodes and would watch two or three discs.
So does this count as the commercial for Right Stuff for this episode, or do you still have to record a separate one?
No, I still have to make one, although it would be pretty easy if if I just said, yeah, that was the ad.
Right, like the talk radio style. Suddenly they start talking about, you know, the elliptical that they all love and enjoy.
Well, I mean,
and then they get back to discussing.
You know. Well, I mean, you know, that said, have you guys heard that, you know, Right Stuff has made it a lot easier for Canadians to find the anime they want and get it home quicker? Have you guys heard that?
I haven't heard of it. Tell me more.
Well, you know, there's no customs wait when Canadians buy from Right Stuff Anime. None. So if you live in Canada, you can go to rightstuffanime.com and order your stuff, and you don't have to wait for it, which is a huge thing. Like, if you're in Canada, you're not getting your stuff as quick as the Americans, right? So this seems like a solution.
Well, now, I guess if I ever get so sick and tired of, you know, internet posts that I live up to the claim of I'm going to move to Canada, I can do so with confidence, knowing that my Right Stuff USA shipments can also function in Canada. And I will still get my anime fix, even though I'm in the great white north.
Well, it's not just going to arrive. They pre-collect the taxes and you get it within, I'm not kidding, 2 to 3 days. Now, that's a deal you can't pass up.
That's blindingly fast.
I know.
You know, on a demographic basis, anime is more popular in Canada than it is in the U.S. Did you know that?
YTV, Mike.
That's right. YTV and Sailor Moon, man. Canada saved Sailor Moon. I'm fond of Canada. I'm like something of a Canada boo, so I'm glad Canada's getting some love. I feel like Canada always gets the short stick from the North American anime business.
It's true. And, you know, Canadians can head on over to rightstuffanime.com.
Hey, this is good. This is good. I feel like this is one of those things where I'm listening to an old episode of The Shadow, the old radio program.
And this episode of The Shadow is brought to you by.
Well,
Winston
I do
want to.
I just want to make sure the listeners know that we did just improvise that whole thing.
Yeah.
There's no script. Yeah, exactly.
And you did an excellent job. Well, I mean, to get back to Turn A Gundam.
Okay. Yeah. Back to Turn A Gundam.
The thing is, over the years, Yoshiyuki Tomino, the director, has occasionally harped on being labeled as an anime director when he always insists that, no, I'm a filmmaker. And I always felt like he was kind of full of shit until I saw Turn A Gundam. It's like, this is the first time I feel like I really understood what he meant and thought it was a credible thing to say.
Yeah, it's not the Vince McMahon, I'm a filmmaker. This is actually, you've made something of, you know, suitable artistic value.
Yeah, it's an excellently paced story that builds a big cast and has time for everyone. Characters' dialogue is kind of idiosyncratic and natural and weird, but not nonsensical. The way the characters are very expressive, they use a lot of body language, shot selection matters. And it's really just this beautiful, interesting little story of the far, far flung future and a conflict where there's lots of good, well-intentioned people on both sides and shit just goes out of control.
Right. Yeah, I mean, so I watched the first few episodes and it was neat, but it was super weird and kind of slow burn at first. Super slow, yeah. And it didn't really grab me, like, so do I power through? Like worth it, even if it's not really grabbing me at the beginning?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right.
It is a hard thing to get into, though, because a lot of our normal anime viewing habits are you have this much time to reach out of the screen and grab me by the collar and pull me in. And Turn A Gundam, you know, maybe it takes about a good 4 or so episodes before they even start doing robot type stuff.
I had kind of a mishap with that show where it came in and I had every intention of reviewing it myself because I had always wanted to see it. And then I started watching it and realized, oh, this is really dense, isn't it? Like, this is going to take me a while to... Not, I don't mean, like, you know, philosophically layered or anything, but, it, you know, dense. Like, it's a dense story. There's a lot to kind of unpack and stuff. That would take a while to review. I'd have to sit there and chew on it. And that set is, like, 25 episodes, right? So I wound up, like, taking a little too long with it and then having to say, okay, I cannot sit on this anymore. I have to get it to somebody who has time for it. And so that was a little bit of a mishap. But I bought a copy of it, and it's sitting here ready to be watched. So, yeah.
Yeah, try and make some time for that, man. I waited a lot longer than I should have, and I don't regret it. I still like it. It was so good that I finished watching it like 2.5 weeks ago, and I still think about the damn show almost every day and how good
it was.
Okay,
all right.
Yeah, and that's usually the sign that it's actually something that you watched through and enjoyed, that it stayed with you, as opposed to I watched it and it was okay, and then by the time I, you know, got up to go to the fridge, I'd already forgotten, you know, pretty much that I'd ever watched it.
Precisely.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And that's all the endorsement that I need. That's okay. That's high praise.
I guess before we continue, I just want to issue an apology to the very hurtful thing that I just said. I meant no disrespect whatsoever to either No Holds Barred or the Marine.
Jesus. Wait, did we almost get through this without someone mentioning wrestling? Did we like?
I snuck it in earlier.
Sneak it in? God damn it!
Someone mentioning a low budget movie starring a wrestler. Yeah. Specifically.
God. Like somehow you'll get a wrestling thing in. It's like the Hamburglar, except in the reverse, and you're delivering wrestling references. Well,
we used to have Heat Guy J jokes, but that's a long time gone.
This is not. Right. You know what, man? Like, I understand that wrestling is nerdy and that nerds like it, but if you didn't get into wrestling when you're a teenager, it is like kryptonite. It's conversation kryptonite. Like,
you know what else is?
I
like
know
that?
People love it.
Anime.
Okay. Like, and I'm not saying that wrestling is terrible. Whatever, man. Love what you love. I'm just saying, like, you know what I'm talking about. Like, if you're not into rugby, like,
want to talk about, you know, basketball or football or whatever esoteric topic. And even within anime, like, if you find like the guy who's really invested in talking about, say, Gundam, and you don't particularly care about Gundam, the best you can do is nod your head and hope they eventually get the signal that you should probably talk about something else. And they never get that signal.
Yeah. Well, it's just one of those things where if you're in a, like a big group of nerds and like there's five people, three of them like wrestling, and they start talking about wrestling and then the conversation becomes wrestling, you know, I guess in that situation you're lucky because you have someone else to talk to. But if it was three and one, that it just kind of, you know, you don't have anything to add.
It's like me in Game of Thrones.
Ah, yes.
Dead.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't resent it. You're just like, man, I don't follow it, so I have no idea what you're talking about.
Basically, wrestling is the anime of wrestling, and anime is the wrestling of anime.
All right. Well,
where
we figured it out.
Does soccer fit into this?
I think we've solved a lot of problems here today.
We don't talk about soccer on the podcast. I don't feel the need to sneak that shit in.
So I saw a few movies recently, the first one being Mamoru Hosoda's The Boy and the Beast. I would go on and on about this, but you can actually just read Jacob's review on the site. I pretty much agree with that. You can take a look at that. That is, it's unfortunate. But you know, maybe his next one will be better. That's kind of the attitude that I'm going to take towards it. Like he is at the beginning of a very long career, or maybe, you know, about a third of the way through a very long career. And he's got a tremendous amount of potential in front of him. So I didn't like this one. Let's see maybe what the next one's like. The other thing was Evangelion. Obviously I reviewed that for the site. So I don't really want to talk about that much. Did you guys buy that?
I've got that bad boy waiting for me. I'm looking forward to seeing that again.
Yeah, it's sitting here, you know, on the inevitably, you know, do I watch this or do we hand it off to somebody else sort of thing. But all I know is that, when I say I'm waiting to watch it, I mean, I saw it like through other means like long, long ago. But,
I saw it in theaters. You know,
yeah, there were convention screenings and some theater stuff, and yeah, it was possible to have seen it years ago.
Yeah, you know, so I mean, it's just one of those things. Like, I was never like the biggest Evangelion fan, so to me, it's kind of like this vindication to me, like, you know, finally everyone sees what I've been seeing, because the reaction to Evangelion, especially among like a lot of the diehard 20-year, you know, lifers, has been like, oh my god, my life has been a lie, I've been tricked all this time, etc., because of, you know, basically, I mean, I think this may even tie into Twitter questions, but I kind of feel like they painted themselves into a corner, they know they're painting themselves into a corner, and they can't possibly, you know, their only hope to salvage, like, that, oh, was it all a fluke, was it all for nothing, is to absolutely nail the fuck out of Ava 4 and just resolve everything perfectly and address everything the way people want. And I think the way that they made Evangelion on the fly is that they don't actually know the answers to these things themselves, which is why it's been like 4 years or whatever, and we still don't have another one to wrap it up. I think they just got to, they're just like, oh god, they're feeling some sort of pressure to that. Like, they need to over deliver on this. Or
You know, there's some kind of pressure, something going on when the director moves on to another project before doing that last film.
Yeah, it means that he's stumped and he doesn't know.
Well, yeah. Or he wanted to take a long break before deciding on the conclusion. You know, these are deeply personal films. Like, I don't know what his conclusion is going to be. It's all there's like the pressure on that film is enormous. Enormous. Like,
it's one of those
if we ever get it, I'll be, you know, the thing is, someone's going to might have to force him to make it. I don't know. Hideaki is not exactly known for being like, grab production by the throat and get it done, you know?
and in fairness, you know, I don't begrudge him for going, you know, getting the chance to go and make a Godzilla movie with his buddy Higuchi.
Oh, that's, yeah.
You know, yeah.
That, also,
that is a chance of a lifetime.
Also, I met Higuchi during the Attack on Titan screening, and I bet he is awesome to hang out with. I kept thinking, like, oh, man, that, like, when they announced that that Anna was making a film with him, I'm like, man, I bet those two are
just inhabit like, screwing around.
Yeah, right, yeah. So,
but yeah, I mean, yeah. I think maybe the thing with 3.33 is that it's one of those things where, depending on how the fourth movie comes out, it could retroactively redeem 3.33. Like, a lot of people walk out being like, did I just see a bad movie or didn't I? I guess it depends on if this gets followed up on correctly. You know, it's a sort of... you know, imagine if it was many years between like The Matrix Reloaded and the third one.
Oh, God.
It's like, well, you know, maybe this is a bad movie. I don't know. It depends on what happens next. Oh, what happened next was terrible. Yes, this was a horrible movie, you know.
Well, you know, the this is horrible stuff is it's from people who really, really, really love 2.22 because it gave them everything they ever wanted. And then 3.0 is more artsy fartsy than that one and is way more interested in the emotional stuff. And there are a lot of Ava fans who ain't into that, and that's cool. That is totally fine. But, you know, when did he ever make that show for the audience? He's not making it for the audience. It's not the goal of Evangelion. That's why when people are like, oh, no, hang on, let me finish. No, no, even 2.22, we say, like, oh, giving the fans what they want, that movie isn't compromised, like, artistically. There's nothing in there that suggests he pulled back or did something different because the fans would want it that way. Like, that movie seems completely like what he wanted to do, and 3.33 is obviously it. So the charge that Evangelion is just doing what the fans want, I just don't buy it. The TV show wasn't like that. End of Evangelion wasn't like that. It's just not that franchise, man.
I think once if we find out that the V guy is resurrected as a result of the strength of, you know, future Evangelion, then we will know that 3.33 has redeemed itself, because I think that is like this film specifically is what was killed him for the time being. And he's vanished, and, you know, we await his return, warriors.
If that's the benchmark, that's right. Then when the fourth one comes out, you got to hold me to that and say, like, remember, if we never hear from Vega again, you have to say Evangelion blew it. And then forevermore, through the rest of my career, this thing that I regard like in the same, like Evangelion is one of my absolute all-time favorite cornerstone things, I'll have to say, well, they blew it. You know,
well, you know what Evangelion's a lot like? It's a lot like professional wrestling in the sense that if you're not real into it as a teenager.
Tell me more. Fuck, man. Anyway, the reason I brought it up was because I did watch 2.22 again, but ahead of this, because I hadn't seen it since like 2010. And man, that is a good movie.
That is a slam bang, mile a minute action fest. I loved it.
No shit, yeah. Man. Yeah.
Even I think that movie's cool.
Knocked it out of the park on that one. Way to go. Maybe he's just like, look, I made you the one you really liked. I'm happy you liked it so much. Just be happy with that.
That got me so excited for the third one. And I had the experience of seeing all three of them in a marathon screening at the Brattle Theater in Cambridge. So it was really interesting to watch the second one and feel the anticipation in the room. And then about half an hour into 3.0, literally audibly hear someone a few rows ahead of me go, oh, as they realize this was not the movie they were expecting.
Well, it turns into the movie they were. No, it doesn't.
I walked out of the theater kind of frustrated, and I really had to sit down and think about it before I came around and started to think, you know, I think what he made was really interesting and I need to see it again. So I'm looking forward to watching it again.
It's, you know what? The more I thought about it, the more after the fact, it's not as pleasurable, but it's art. And that's what Evangelion is. Evangelion is art. So I am happy that 3.33 is the way it is. Because 2.22 is such an effective action movie that it, you know, it doesn't feel challenging. It's not challenging. It just happens to not be challenging at all. So, you know, yeah, I'm glad it went there. But I am going to rewatch the whole TV show. Justin bought the Blu-rays, so I got to borrow his.
Nice.
Yeah. So I'm going to rewatch the whole show, and we'll probably do an Ancast on it. Because, you know, what the world needs is more discussion of Evangelion.
Absolutely, man. Hey, I rewatched it in 2014 when I sold my set for some World Cup money. I had to get one watch in one last time. I thought it held up well. It was a good show.
Yeah,
How much did you get for that set back then?
I had the Platinum Edition Thin Pack, and I think I got about $85 for it.
That's about right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's about right.
Yeah, I got the Platinum Edition not Thin Pack with, like, all the extra crap. So I'm just holding on to that one.
Yeah, that has the booklets and stuff, so that should get you a little bit more if it's in good shape.
Yeah, I occasionally around the used shops, I will see one of those, the completed... I have a box set, the full-size ones, and they always want, like, $250 for it. I have the thin pack one. Let's get to these Twitter questions. All right. Miles Express 99, speaking of the devil. Since many historically unlicensable anime are still getting licensed, what are your favorites that we're still missing?
Well,
Future
the big
Boy
one.
Conan.
Hang on.
Future
not
Boy
every,
Conan.
Just not everyone all at once. Con, all right. One at a time. Mike. You said Future Boy Conan. Now, the question is, do we get a cut of this if you license these and they make you money? do we get a consulting?
I think that should be a yes.
Do we get
should definitely get some of that revenue.
I think consulting fees is, you know, you'll get an invoice. Anyway, so Future Boy Conan.
Right. Future Boy Conan occurs to me immediately. Okay. Absolutely.
Right. You know, we have to just kind of wrest that from the estate of, you know, Alexander Key, and then maybe we'll see that cartoon. And then as far as the other, like, you know, favorites, as far as something I've seen that we're still missing, the big one for me is Macross.
I think
that's just the one that's just the easiest to think of is like, yes, a thing that I like right now that I know is good that we're missing. And that's like a big hole in the American anime fan scene. And the story for why everyone pretty much is disgusted to death. So, you know, it is how it's going to be. And, you know, hey, we're getting a new Macross show. At least Japan is, and we're not this year.
Yeah. Yeah, Macross is my answer as well. Specifically Macross 7. But, you know, whatever. Bring the whole thing. Like, somebody strong arm Harmony Gold. It just takes one person, one company with the right amount of money and the right amount of gumption to crowbar Macross loose from the iron grip of Harmony Gold.
Yes, we just need, like, Coke Industries presents Macross.
Yeah, man. Yeah, man. Funimation's got all that Attack on Titan money. Blow it on Macross.
I don't know. You remember last year, Harmony Gold were in court with Hasbro over the Jetfire toy. That thing seemed to wrap up pretty quick, huh?
Yeah, I think they basically just kind of dropped it because it was Harmony Gold bringing that against Hasbro as opposed to Hasbro going after Harmony Gold.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yep, quick settled. All right. Hazukari, your friend of mine, wants to know, who would be your dream guest at an anime con? That's a good question now. I feel like you can't give the lame-ass Miyazaki answer, so, you know, who would it be?
I think... go ahead, Mike.
I was to act, Daryl. I was going to say, Daryl, you go first this time.
Okay, well,
maybe I should control the show and tell you which one of you should go first. Go ahead, Daryl.
Be a moderator. I think one of the key, like, great... like pillars of anime who has basically sort of almost avoided the United States after a fashion would be Gona Guy. He goes to conventions. He just doesn't come to conventions in America. And he's a great, like, influential guest. I don't know if he just hates us or just doesn't think that, you know, he doesn't have a fan base here because he doesn't. But you know, he's a guy who has done it all. And been there from, you know, almost basically day one as far as modern anime is concerned. And, you know, his influence on manga as well cannot be understated. I think he'd be an incredible guest to have at a con in which they weren't translating what he was saying into Italian or French.
Well, my answer to that question would be Leiji Matsumoto, because that bastard always cancels. He's it's been less lately, but I feel like throughout most of the 90s when I was going to my first cons, like half of them he'd be on the bill for, and then no, he'd end up canceling.
He's another guy who seems to be avoiding America a lot, and I don't know, maybe that's understandable, okay, based on watching the works that he's made over the years. Maybe he doesn't particularly care for America that much.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I'm just intrigued because I feel like in the early days, he was someone who would always show up on the bill and you'd think, oh, finally I get to see this guy. And no, every time he'd cancel.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm trying to think of who do I really want to interview? That's typically like, you know, the first question that comes to mind, and you know, that would require me going through the current season and like, you know, picking and choosing, and then my brain starts working like, well, what's going to bring traffic into the site? So, but you know, personally, I guess if I like absolutely had to pick one, I wouldn't mind talking to Kentaro Miura. That would be fun.
Oh, it yeah, he's got like to get him to put down the Idolmaster controller first, but yeah.
I don't know if he's a Kota Hirano type, you know, just a nerd living the dream, or if he's got you know, something else going on, but I think he would be an interesting guy to talk to.
I know is that he's playing Idolmaster and can't be bothered to finish Berserk.
Yeah, well, mangaka that have been doing it forever and are like institutions like that, you kind of want to find it because they, you know, they live. I don't know. My impression is that they live largely in isolation and would do nothing but that. And it's an interesting life, and so you know that's a cool thing. But
it would be interesting. I mean, he used to be like a staple at conventions, like, you know, back when he was, I think, living here. But it's been a really long time, to my memory, that we saw Kunihiko Ikuhara at an American Anime
Convention. Yeah, he hasn't shown up to any. Neither he nor his leather pants have shown up to any anime conventions.
Yeah, or his Sailor Mars costume.
Yeah, right. I would love it if he would come back. That would be great. Maybe you know, Yurikuma just didn't quite do what they wanted to do. So, I don't know. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff. I think it's time to bring some of these folks back. I mean, yeah.
That'd be sure.
Cool. All right. Rogue of Space wants to know, which upcoming indie or AAA games, okay, so which upcoming video games are you looking forward to, if any?
Firewatch is something that I've already pre-ordered. That comes out next week. I'm looking forward to that.
Oh, is that next week?
It comes out in a few days, yeah. And I never really cared for The Walking Dead, but yeah, I know a lot of people are just really, you know, hyped up for that one.
It sounds like the type of game I'd like to play, in that it's something different, something weird, something emergent, and it isn't going to take me, you know, 3 months of 4 hours a day playing to get through, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I've got to say that Fallout 4 is the most unsatisfying game I've ever played more than 100 hours of.
Oh, man.
Yeah, precisely.
Man.
I don't want a Fallout 4. I want something that I can be done with in a month and really like and think about a lot.
I'm getting real close to uninstalling Fallout 4, having played having played virtually none of it.
Like, I don't blame you, but anyway, I spent so much money on that game. That's like, I have to get the amount of huge money I spent this game to get my money's worth. But for me, as far as what I'm looking forward to, XCOM 2 comes out in a few days.
Okay.
That's going to consume my life because I just love that to death. Torment, Tides of Numenera, that was a game I kickstarted at a fairly high amount because I was just a huge fan of Planescape Torment and Wasteland 2 as well. So those are going to be like two of my top for the year. It's currently in early access on Steam. Deus Ex 4, or I guess, you know, the second prequel or whatever, I'm looking forward to that. My expectations are a little diminished because the team that made that also made the rebooted Thief, which is my worst game of that year that it came out. But I greatly enjoyed Deus Ex Human Revolution as a longtime fan of the original. And so I'm hoping that all they have to do is keep along that lines for Human Uprising, and that'll be good. So those, like, each of those games I intend to like sink a huge amount of time into. And all I can think about is, man, I never started The Witcher 3 yet.
Man, yeah, you should.
I never started The Witcher 1.
Well, the second expansion for it comes out later this year, so you know that can also be an upcoming title looking forward to.
There you go. Yeah, right now it's a little dry, but I haven't had a whole lot of time for video games, so I've played 2 seconds of Rise of the Tomb Raider, and I'm looking forward to getting into it.
I know all I've heard is that Dave Riley did not like it and thought it was a huge step down from the previous one. I still haven't started the previous one.
Oh, I really liked the previous one. So
I love that.
Yeah,
that was my favorite game of a couple of years ago. I thought it was wonderful.
It's a cool game.
I own it. It's just on my incredibly giant to play through list.
Yeah, I guess I'll go ahead and get Firewatch. And then I want to get The Witness and then probably not play very much of it. Like, that's probably what's going to happen. But I'm intrigued. Like, maybe I'll watch someone play it. Oh, that sounds boring. I don't
know. Yeah, everyone said it's like, you know, for all the talk of like, oh, hundreds of puzzles, like 90% of it is basically the same puzzles.
Yeah, well, I don't get that much enjoyment out of like Myst type games.
No, I hate those games.
Yeah, but it looks pretty and I want to see it. Maybe I'll probably just watch a YouTube video.
Yeah, the same is true of Myst, incidentally. It looks gorgeous. I can't stand the story or the gameplay.
Well, it did. Once upon a time, it looked good. Now
it was the reason to buy your CD-ROM drive.
Yeah, right.
That's right.
Gotta get the caddy.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I don't know. I need to look at... Oh, Street Fighter V. Yeah, I'm stoked. That should be fun. I got the beta. I pre-ordered it. I finally got the beta access. I haven't even had time to go over and turn it on. Like, I still have not played that game. I have no idea what it plays like. So,
yeah, I mean, as much as I love Street Fighter, I have to just look in the mirror and say, like, listen, I bought Arcade Edition, and then I bought Ultra, and then I never played either of them. I haven't played Street Fighter since Super Street Fighter 4, because that time in my life, I guess, has moved beyond me, and I kind of just want to play these games for their goofy story modes, and that's it. And I guess Street Fighter 5 is adding more into their goofy story mode later this year, so maybe that'll be the time that I at least dip into that without going in that full competition land that, you know, is where that stays alive, really.
Right. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know. I guess it's just not that much I'm really looking forward to right now. Video games. I'll get back to them at some point. Cyber Mormon asks, it's time we know... Wait, hang on. I'm skipping that one. Okay, the Savero 23 asks, where does New Lupin rank among Lupins? Is it the best? I mean, that's favorite, right? I mean, no one can determine best Lupin.
It's so varied is the thing. It's that they're so wildly different in tone over the years that one person may enjoy what one series is doing, and the same person may look at the exact same thing and say, I don't like that one. So it's very difficult to quantify best versus worst, and I think Reed did a pretty good job of, you know, enumerating that sentiment in his, you know, guide on the site.
I mean, for me, it's easier to get through what I've seen of it so far than it was to get through Pink Jacket Lupin, which I've still only seen like 8 or 9 episodes of.
Mm. Yeah, the Reagan era Lupin the Third, as we all, you know, refer to it, is generally agreed upon by a lot of people as like a least favorite. But I see that now that it's out and more people are seeing it and it's kind of been, you know, followed up with other things, I think people are kind of going back and having like somewhat of an appreciation for it. Kind of
I still want to watch it.
The 1960s Batman, like, this kind of had this resurgence in appreciation after being like this reviled joke of a thing for many, many years. And now people are like, no, that was cool. Maybe Pink Jacket Lupin is maybe next to be sort of reevaluated. But yeah, where the new Lupin ranks, I do like it a lot. I will say that.
It is
definitely a big step up from what I think is kind of the lower points of the series, which is a lot of the yearly specials that got done that were just neither here nor there.
Some of those are very, very mediocre.
Yeah.
They're in that hell of not bad enough to be interesting.
Yeah. Know? And I think a lot of it is just, you know, the shadow cast by the Castle of Cagliostro is just so long that everything is like, well, that's a template for how our story has to unfold and progress. And no, it's not. And I think I'm glad that both Fujiko Mine as well as this new series are at least not like slavishly dedicated to Cagliostro the way some of the other specials have been.
Yeah. For me, one of the keys to the new series is the fact that they got Yuji Ono back to do the musical score, because like that jazz funk shit he does, I could listen to that all day. It's great.
Yeah. I don't know. I like, there's Lupin for every taste, really. Like, I, when people, sometimes you'll say that, and you'll, and people, cool, it's Cagliostro. And like, well, not for me, it isn't. Like, Cagliostro's okay, but I like Lupin with an edge, and that doesn't have any edge at all.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of In Memory of the Walther P-38, or, you know, Island of Assassins, as it was called here. I know a lot of people who despise that one.
Mm. Yeah, I mean,
that's
for me,
like a much harder edge one.
Like, for me, I've always enjoyed Lupin, but Fujiko Mine was like a step beyond. Like, that was a show I loved. It just happened to be Lupin.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's what I'm into. This is like a nice halfway point between Fujiko Mine and, you know, standard ass Lupin. So I think it's a good, it's like the perfect balance. It's like pH balanced. It's good. Okay. Also from Sabro 23, it feels as though there are more mystery anime than usual in the last couple seasons. Any reason for that?
Sherlock. I think, you know, that BBC Sherlock is just the most popular thing in the world. And everyone is like, okay, we got to get in on this somehow.
Yep, that's my answer too. I mean, mysteries have always had a significant amount of popularity, but yeah, the spike, that's entirely Sherlock.
They go in and come out of style. You know, that's they were more in style in the 80s, and then they kind of went out of style in the 90s, and now they're sort of back in style. Even though that was at least 15 years ago, and I skipped a decade.
Well, except for Detective Conan, which will never leave us in our lifetimes.
Yeah, probably not. All right. Incompetent Crit asks, is there any chance for the reputation of light novels to improve, or will they continue to be considered examples of what people don't like about modern anime? Well, I mean, it's not fair to say light novels, period. That's
yeah, because Vampire Hunter D was light novels. So.
I mean, you know.
Well, what's funny, actually, Daryl, is like I never really heard it referred to as such until very recently. It's just, I don't know. I like the Vampire Hunter D novels don't feel any different to me than the Robert E. Howard, Conan, and Solomon Kane novels I read, you know, years ago.
Well, it's pulp, which is the same as a light novel, right? I mean,
I guess
sort of, right? It kind of kind of serves the same function.
I have trouble arriving at an opinion on this because I haven't read many modern light novels.
Well, okay, like. To suggest that, okay, I kind of disagree with the premise of this, as though the reputation of light novels needs to be saved or is, you know, permanently marred or whatever. It's just a source that people adapt from. Like, we joke about light novel stuff, but what we're really talking about are Magic High School shows. And,
yeah, exactly.
You know,
right.
That's what we're really talking about.
We're talking about Trapped in an MMO, Magical High School, the current trends that are hot in their equivalent of YA in Japan, which is light novels.
That's the YA
stuff. I do the same thing in America where I'm making fun of all these dystopian society with special teens. That's not an indictment of young adult literature. It's an indictment of what the trend in YA is for the last several years, and maybe once that moves away and is replaced with something else, then perhaps the adaptations, we won't be looking to scorn YA so much. In the case of anime, we're adapting from light novels, and the current hot topic, you know, tropes are things like incest, being trapped in an MMO, being the most cool person, Magic High School of anime, you know, like, and that's what we're really against, not the medium itself.
Well, it's more like there's just, okay, so your point is perfect, because it's basically like, okay, Absolute Duo and World Break. Okay, that's The Maze Runner and Divergent. Just look at it that way. It'll fade, and something else will come along. Just wait it out. There's plenty of good stuff. Just wait it out. Okay, let's see here. No, I'm not going to ask Mike about soccer. Sorry, Mike.
No worries.
Let's see here. Ford DM asks, opinions on Aniplex taking back several of its licenses from Funimation. So, I mean, everyone has an opinion on this, right?
Oh, yeah.
How dare you? No.
How dare you? I forgot about that. Well, I'm a bit concerned that the shows that they're quote-unquote taking back, like Bakano, will over time become inaccessible, which kind of what happened with Kanagi and Toward the Terra and Star Driver and like a lot of the older Bandai Entertainment stuff. Mm-hmm. Like you can't even stream those anymore. They're just kind of gone.
Right.
And that's basically the concern that I would share, is that even though Aniplex historically has been very, very good at keeping their titles streaming online, such that, okay, sure, it may be hard and expensive to get the physical set, you can still at least watch the show without any particular difficulty. And as these titles seem to revert back, it's sort of still a question mark, really, as far as is that still going to be the case? I think you're only going to see people really start being up in arms when it's like, now this show is gone and I can't see it, period. Otherwise, if it's available to be watched for free, but you have to pay the, you know, stupid expensive price for DVD and Blu-ray, okay, yeah, that's a complaint, but it's not the end of the world because you can at least still have the show.
Mm-hmm.
And so more and more of these things revert back, as long as it's still streaming on a site that people use, like, say, a Crunchyroll or a Funimation website or even a Hulu or Netflix, you know, Netflix obviously is the best option. I don't think it's really going to make a whole lot of waves. I think it's only going to be if it reverts back to them and then you can't see it. And now it's only in the hands of those people who spent that huge amount of money for that Blu-ray set. Then you'll see people be like, you know, a little more justifiably irritated.
Yeah. I mean, I will say I dislike some of the chatter I've been seeing, you know, calling Aniplex USA greedy and evil and capricious. It's just a business, you know?
Yeah.
It's just some people running a business. There's enough anime out there that even if they took and imprisoned my absolute favorite, I could just kind of shrug and move on.
If you're Disney and Fox owns the Fantastic Four and Silver Surfer and their contract is up and it's up to you to solely your decision to determine whether or not those properties come back to you and you get to make money on them, or they stay with Fox and Fox gets to make money on them. So, if you're a company, what do you do in that instance?
Yeah.
I think imagine if, say, to go back to your Twilight Time example, if there was no other way to, say, see this new Captain Harlock movie except to buy their set, then maybe, you know, you'd have some justifiable irritation. But as it stands, you can still watch these things. It's only just if you're a hardcore collector who wants to put up the big money that you have to get this boutique item. And I think this is comparable.
I mean, look, I try not to get too precious about business. And look, would it be better if they just left it with Funimation, who have been the stewards of that franchise and gave it an incredible home? And like, Funimation launched the hell out of that show, all right? They sold the crap out of it. Like, I kind of feel like, in a sense, you know, they are responsible for making that show the gigantic hit that it was here, because I feel like they sold it right. Like, the show spoke for itself, of course, but to give them no credit seems crappy, and they, you know, people love that dub. That dub was a huge part of that show's success, so that show leaving their hands feels like betrayal. But the thing is that that's a product owned by a company. And if we get too precious about that stuff, that means you're starting to make demands on business that are just sentimental. And then I feel like if that's where your expectations are at as a fan, you're going to get nothing but heartbreak. Like, if you
that's modern geek culture.
But if you expect a company to make a business decision just out of the kindness of their heart because it feels better to you, not because it matches their bottom line, like, I'm not saying, like, become cynical. I'm saying lower your expectations. Like, expect business to happen. Expect the decision that benefits one party more than the other will happen. Like, that's the reality, you know?
Let's also make no mistake. I'm sure there was a number, an amount of money that Funimation could have given to Aniplex to keep the show in their hands. And Funimation, you know, crunched the numbers and decided, you know, no, we're not going to go there.
Yeah, especially since that number didn't include the Blu-ray, because I know it was a big sticking point for many people that the Blu-ray was exclusively, you know, an Aniplex thing, and that if you wanted to see it in HD, you know, that was your option other than, you know, the stream. But the stream is also pretty decent quality as well, so I'm not really going to, you know, get the pitchforks just yet.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if Aniplex had said something like, okay, we're going to yank, we're yanking these rights, and also we are never, ever re-releasing this English dub ever again. Like, they just said something like, we're just not going to give it back to you. Then I could see saying, like, okay, that sucks. But in this instance, it's literally like, okay, this is rights changing hands. Actually, it's not changing hands. It's going back to the parent company. Like, there's nothing you can do about it. And they don't owe Funimation. Like, Funimation isn't owed the option of profiting forever off of Fullmetal Alchemist. That can be revoked. And it is. The parent company's taking it. That's how licenses work.
Well, and on that note, I mean, Fullmetal Alchemist is going to be vanishing from streaming in a couple months, I think. Isn't it going to, like, maybe the end of March or so? Going to disappear
March,
from Hulu, et cetera?
March 31st, I think, was the date that the movie and Brotherhood. And, yeah, I think just those two were going to vanish both from streams and from home video.
Yeah, I absolutely want to stress, this is a disappointing decision. Like, that's disappointing.
It's kind of a bummer.
It's a bummer. You know. It's a bummer. No one's happy about it, but, you know, flailing out of control and throwing your shit everywhere because of this really seems like that's just an instance where your expectations are maybe not realistic when it comes to straight-up business. So that was my point. Like, I just... It's okay to just be realistic about... You're not compromising your principles if you are realistic about what to expect from these companies. In fact, you will probably suffer a lot less heartbreak. Anyway, Fake Brazilian asks, I've been enjoying shows that are under 25 minutes long recently. Are there any that you like? And he mentions Good Good Fairies and, you know, things like that.
Well, I am watching Oji-san and Marshmallow or whatever the hell that's called. The one with the Paul Blart guy and the marshmallows.
Yeah.
That's a good show.
Yeah.
That's solid. The most recent episode I particularly enjoyed, it's just him by himself on a factory tour, and then the workers afterwards having this really funny conversation about, you know, oh, he loves this factory. That's ridiculous, isn't it? It's like, well, you like him too, don't you? It's like, I guess I'm ridiculous too. But yeah. That's a good show.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of shorter anime. I actually do panels at conventions all about short anime, which is, you know, usually I say under 15 minutes as opposed to under 25. But as far as something current, or at least the most recent one that I watched, I was a real big fan of Strawberry Flavored Fist of the North Star, which was, this very Cromarty-esque kind of series using sort of Fist of the North Star as its basis. The episodes were 2 minutes long. They were just, appended to the end of another show that was a longer series. And so it was a little harder for people to see, I think. But yeah, I do enjoy shows like that a lot, especially, I think, another great recent one. It's not even that recent because it's a few years old now. Insufficient Direction. All about growing up, being married to, not growing up, but living life, being married to Hideaki Anno.
Right.
So, that's a lot of fun.
Let's not forget Emperor of All Short Anime, TQ. Sure.
I never could get into TQ. I know there's
it's
always
hard.
Like one
Barely.
Or two disgraces to America who are always at every convention hyping up and proselytizing TQ. But
it's simple. What you have to do is after those first couple of episodes, when the nosebleed sets in, you got to tilt your head back and pinch your nose closed. And then by okay. that third episode, it'll have stopped.
Ah, okay.
And then you feel the drip, and the drip's pretty good.
Yeah, right. I was going to say, the pounding headache, on the other hand, does not go away. That's a show that's just a mile a minute craziness. And it's kind of a blessing and a curse that it's all over in 2.5 minutes.
It's weird because I actually appreciate I Me, which is very cut from a similar cloth as TQ, but I just, for whatever reason, TQ has sort of evaded me.
I mean, I've seen a few. I get it. It doesn't.
It's not like a thing that's like, oh, I got to watch through all these.
Now. I get it, you know.
But the great thing about short anime is that even if you don't particularly care for it, it's over before you know it.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Yeah. I want to watch, I keep meaning to watch that one that's about the salary woman who's just a drunk. I keep meaning to watch
that. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, yes.
Wakako Zake.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
That's a very good one.
Excellent.
I like that a lot.
All right. Let's see here. Vinny of AGC asks, what movies are you looking forward to? Well, I know Daryl's answer. Right?
What would that be?
Well, Batman versus Superman. You must be stoked.
Oh, I forgot that existed. Yeah, but no,
excuse
yes,
me,
absolutely.
Zach. Excuse me, Zach.
What?
V Superman.
What? I'm sorry. You'll need to say that again.
Batman v Superman. Not versus Superman. Batman v Superman, which, you know, I look at that title and I think, oh my God, are they getting a divorce?
Well, I almost said, well, Batman.
The court case.
Well, yeah. Well, excuse me, Batman. You're like, no, I won't. It's Batman v Superman: Dawn of Justice. Let's get the title right.
That's right. There's going to be two of them.
Yes.
So yeah, I guess. Yeah, sure. I will certainly watch that. Probably because it comes out like very close to my birthday. and I'll go in and see that film. But as far as like, you know, films I am looking forward to, it's basically the things that people are advertising the hell out of, because I haven't really been paying attention to like what are these upcoming films coming out. But certainly we're getting Star Wars at some point. We're getting, yep, you know, three more Fast and the Furious movies. Mm. So
hell yes.
That's really the true art is
yeah,
there.
Dead. You know, I think about movies from 2016 and it's just like, oh yeah, I'm looking forward to Star Wars 8 and X-Men 8 and most of all, untitled fifth Bourne identity film.
Yes.
I'm a little shocked, Daryl, that your first answer wasn't Deadpool.
I'll go see Deadpool. I mean, the thing is, Deadpool is one of those things where I actually haven't seen any advertising at all for the movie, and I'm sure they're extremely pervasive and extremely obnoxious because Deadpool fans are basically Harley Quinn fans because they're basically the same type of, you know, irritation. But I actually do like certain runs of the Deadpool comic quite a bit. Not some of the most famous ones, but, or some of the most long-running ones. So I guess it will depend partially on the material adapted or what tone they're going for this movie, which I'm not actually sure when it comes out. I think it's very soon, right, Mike? Didn't you say you had to go see it an early showing?
Yeah, I think it comes out like the first week or like the last weekend of February or the first weekend of March. But I have advanced screening passes to see it tomorrow night. So I'm looking forward to seeing it, not paying a dime for it. I'll say that.
Mm. Yeah, Mike was like, hey, guys, is it cool if we push the recording time to like 7:30 p.m. Pacific so I can go see Deadpool? And I was like, Mike, if I got to work until 9 or 9:30 p.m., not that talking to you guys is work, but producing the show is work.
Yeah.
And for fucking Deadpool, no way. Like,
but you could have had me talking about Deadpool. It would have been such fresh content.
I could have had the early review of which is what people come to Ancast for, early reviews of comic book films that
are going to make a ton of money anyway.
Yeah, specifically comic book movies aimed at 13-year-olds. Like,
right, that are rated R.
The nation's angriest 13-year-olds.
Okay, check it out. I have, in the time we've been talking, I have been looking at movies that are coming soon, and now I can answer legitimately, me and Mike, day one, London Has Fallen, Mike.
Oh, hell yeah.
The sequel to Olympus Has Fallen is happening.
Absolutely.
Now,
absolutely.
I saw Olympus Has Fallen in the theaters.
I also saw Olympus Has Fallen in the theaters.
So I will see London Has Fallen.
Absolutely. These are important.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, there's a new Coen Brothers movie that comes out tomorrow,
yes,
actually.
Oh, yeah.
Hail Caesar, correct?
Yeah, which is getting, hey, this is okay reviews.
Oh, man, because, yeah, like, that's the thing. Like, Coen Brothers comedies, I think you even mentioned this before, like, they're either awesome,
yeah,
or it's like, oh, man, I wanted this to be so much better.
It is.
Is it going to be Raising Arizona, or is it going to be Burn After Reading?
So here's the thing. Not Burn After Reading.
Okay.
Which is all
wait a second. Wait, hold on. God's Not Dead 2.
Yeah, okay. Now we can't go there. We can't go down that particular road. But the reviews for Hail Caesar largely have said, like, yeah, sure. The thing I'm excited about is they do entire production numbers specifically in the style of movies from that period, and the cinematography is by Roger Deakins. So butt in seat. That's my butt in a seat watching that. Excited for that. Star Wars, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, there's Marvel stuff. There's Disney stuff.
All that shit's going to come out, and we're going to see
all that Marvel, all that Star Wars, you know, we'll go see these things. I understand that Oliver Stone's got a movie with Nicolas Cage in it, and, you know, so why not hate myself? I try not to pay too much attention to, like, what movies are coming out a year from now. I just am like, oh, this is coming out this week. Okay, sure, I'll be ready. And that, I think, tempers your expectations a little more realistically rather than if you've just been following, you know, the IV drip of, you know, pre-production news items constantly. Although I know, Zach, you are counting down the days to Independence Day 2 and Warcraft. And
oh, shit. No, you're wrong. No. The film is Gods of Egypt, Daryl.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about Gods of Egypt. Yes. The very authentically cast film with also from London Has Fallen star Gerard Butler.
That looks so good. I cannot wait to see Gods of Egypt. I bet it's fucking terrible.
Oh,
I just want to wallow in that thing. Yeah.
That, you know, Fast and the Furious in space. We don't get, you know, a regular one this year, but we get Star Trek instead. So I'll absolutely.
Oh, God. Star Trek looks so bad.
Works for me.
Star Trek looks terrible, man. That trailer sucked. Maybe it'll be good.
I can see it. So I just know it's like, you know, people are mad that it's Fast and the Furious in space. And I'm like, it's Fast and the Furious in space?
Well, see, that sounds great. But the trailer totally is not Fast and the Furious in space. Like, the, whatever I don't know what trailer they saw, but that's not what I saw.
All right.
I would love Fast and Furious in space.
Zach, this is why we don't watch trailers.
Okay.
I don't watch trailers.
I can't. Yeah. I still. Well, actually, you know, I go to the movies so often that, honestly, it's not like I'd be able to avoid them. Like, I've seen that Warcraft trailer in front of every movie for the past, like, 6 months. There's no way
I always walk in after the trailers end, or if there's reserved seating, then I can just hang out in the lobby.
I've started doing that, where I actually just know, I go to the same AMC theater, it's reserved seats, and I know exactly, like, it's 15 or 16 minutes exactly of trailers. So if I show up about 15 minutes after the movie says it's starting, I will miss all the trailers. It's a pretty good system. I highly recommend it if you hate that shit. Actually, reserved seats takes pretty much all the headache out of going to the movies. All of it.
Yeah, and that's why the theater that I go to took them away after instituting them, because they were like, oh, people aren't buying the crappy seats now because they can see that the good seats are taken.
Yeah, the AMC near me just made it so that all of the seats are good. Like, they don't sell shitty seats.
Don't sell garbage seats, and that's the real solution.
Like, the theater only holds, like, 50 people, but they're all paying 15, 17 bucks a ticket, and there's no bad seats. Like,
see, I have a theater that has the reserved seats, and if you go Sunday morning at 11 o'clock, tickets are $7.
Yep.
Perfect.
There you go.
Perfect.
Yeah, that's when you go.
That's a dream.
Okay. Also from Vinny Ave, do you think we'll see a Hollywood Magical Girl film? Yeah. Do you think we will see a Hollywood Magical Girl film in the near future, 5 or so years? I cannot imagine there will not be some attempt.
The question is one of these fundamental, like, cornerstone pillars of what drives nerd culture. And it's this need for validation by way of mainstream successful blockbuster film, which is why people are so emotionally invested in box office receipts. Mm. It's because they want people to know that this thing that they're into is now, like, this number one thing seen by a lot of people, except they were there first, so they can still be persecuted about it. I don't really see what it adds if we get a movie about magical girls to the, you know, breadth of material.
I think we could have been pushed in the direction of something like that if that gem movie hadn't been such
a piece
of shit.
If it was a real gem movie with
cars going
off
cliffs.
And the misfits and getting into hijinks and somebody getting attacked by a mountain lion and maybe discovering Shangri-La and Bigfoot falls in love with Pizzazz. That's the gem movie that we could have seen and could have gotten. Yeah. And then maybe Magical Girls would be real.
Mm. But yeah, no, Hollywood is not going to attempt anything like that unless something like that succeeds. You know?
Yeah. No, I can see that.
Gem did not, I don't think so.
I just, like, the way box office fortunes are currently going, they, you know, all of these studios are looking for franchise opportunities with female leads. Like, a lot of them are. The Hunger Games, you know, set that off. Divergent is doing very, very well. Like, there are, you know, it's not like there's a gold rush for this stuff or anything, but to suggest that no one will ever do anything with Sailor Moon, I'm sorry, this is just too much money. It's too much money. That is a property that you can make a lot of money on in the U.S. So
yeah,
I mean, the real
hurdle is Toei and not getting something like the Dragon Ball movie. That's basically it.
All right. Okay, we got a few more here. We'll wrap up just after this. Let's see. Firquin Root asks, any running theories on when Ava 4.0 is coming out or what's holding it up? I'm going to go ahead and propose that maybe they don't really have a script yet. I'm going to throw that out there.
Thing. I think he's painted himself into a corner, like we just said, and is like, I got to write this thing some point, but I don't know what I'm going to write.
And he's working on another movie right now. That'll hold it up too.
Yep. So I'm going to say no sooner than 2019. 18. No sooner than 2018. I would say that.
Yep.
All right. Weepy Sweet Money wants to know, best TV anime studio in the game right now?
You know, I was surprised that Madhouse doesn't seem to have really lost a step following, like, the MAPPA split. But I really think, like, you know, especially coming off of things like Space Dandy and One Punch Man and, you know, that sort of stuff that, you know, they're
Space Dandy was Bones. Let's not forget.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's why did I say Madhouse? Maybe the Shingo Natsume connection.
Same director.
Yeah, that must have been why. But yeah, Bones is also incredibly great. I mean, Blood Blockade Battlefront was exceptional. I think I have very high expectations for My Hero Academia. So yeah, I think you know, for me, Bones or Madhouse, I think, are kind of the top. And then maybe a tier below is like Production IG when they decide to care.
Like I see a lot of talk online about how, well, you know, the distinction between studios isn't really meaningful anymore. I don't think that's totally true. I think there's some truth to that. Like if your show isn't a Madhouse show, then you're not going to get a Kawajiri episode. So, you know, there's that.
Yeah. Like the people doing the storyboards and stuff, like that's what's studio unique, even though, yeah, it may technically be true that everybody has to perform animation duties for everybody else at some form or fashion. Like I'm sure, you know, Studio Kara must have employed quite a few people to make these Ava movies, let's say. Mm-hmm. You know, that's just how it is. But I think you probably hear that line of thought being pushed the hardest by like the key animation crowd, the people heavily into that, as opposed to people who focus on like, you know, direction and writing and producing and things like that, that, you know, mm-hmm. to be fair, certain screenwriters, they're not like bound to a studio necessarily, but right, guys exactly. like Kawajiri are.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think one name that should come up in the mix is also Kyoto Animation, yeah. just because they're doing a really interesting thing. They're trying to make their business more sustainable by producing more of their stuff directly. Like, you know, we talk about Madhouse and Bones. A lot of the stuff they do, they're still hired guns for. I mean, Madhouse only really survived because they kind of sold themselves to NTV. And Kyoto Animation is kind of moving in the opposite direction to that.
Yeah, they're going towards yeah, full self-sufficiency.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would say, like, in terms of just animation, yeah, sure, it's Kyoto Animation, right? I mean, what are you going to
do? Yeah.
How would you argue with that? Like, if you watch Sound Euphonium, it's like, well, I don't think there's television animation that's much better than this. Like,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think another studio that I think generally does very strong work is Satellite, but they're a lot more variable as far as like their highs and their lows. Again, Macross Delta, we'll see.
All right, last question, also from Miles. Which of us is Lupin, Goemon, and Jigen?
I'm Jigen.
Just going to claim it?
I'm just claiming it.
I'm going to say that if you're just going to claim that, Mike, you and I could basically, you know, it doesn't matter. You could slot us into either one of these, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sorry. I look at the Lupin gang and I always identify with Zenigata.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, you know, what about Zenigata?
Yeah. it's you know, the frantically behind on every task, the obsession with things, the has a loving family somewhere but never gets to see them. You know, yeah, Zenigata.
Yeah. If we're going by appearance, Jake is Lupin. There's no question about it.
Wasn't Jake supposed to be here? What happened?
Yeah, sorry. Like, scheduling issues and other work to do got in the way. So, sorry about that. Okay, so before we wrap up, we've got something exciting. Mike, you have something to share with us today.
Yes, I do. As you guys know, I do occasionally do some production work for the Discotech company, the little DVD boutique label out of Florida. We actually just released Night of the on Blu-ray for the first time, which, you know, that's got me and Justin doing a commentary track. I'll also point out that thing is actually 1080p, which makes it even better than the Japanese Blu-ray, which is only 1080i.
All right.
Yeah, we know that Justin lives and dies Night in the Galactic Railroad and did everything in his powers, which are immense,
that's
to make
correct.
The best possible Blu-ray ever.
Discotech's been taking all my money lately, man.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, But something that Discotech does a lot of is license rescues, going back and finding the forgotten stuff that has long been out of print. And one of those things is that we've just acquired and we'll be releasing soon is the 1993 four-part OVA from Ashi Productions, directed by Yoriyasu Kogawa and based on the original comics by Kazumasa Hirai and Jiro Kawata, Eight Man After.
Now, are we finally going to get the Japanese audio of Eight Man After?
Yes. Yes, this DVD will include all four episodes in both English and Japanese with English subtitles. It's never been made available subtitled before. And, you know, Zach, ANN reviewed Eight Man After in 2001. So I'm looking forward to seeing how it's going to be received in the here and now.
Nice. Yeah. I'm going to go back and update that review. Yeah. Like, I'll just add a paragraph.
You don't know much. Those are cyber junkies.
I'm just going to add a paragraph onto the end that says the 2016, like, fucking 15 years later, someone goes back in. That would be great. Well, that's cool. I've never seen that.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That was a staple of, like, the Saturday morning sci-fi channel anime, although they would cut out, like, all the parts where he'd rip somebody's arm off.
Right.
Or, you know, perform. That's a very interesting OVA because it functions as both a spin-off of sorts and a direct sequel.
There are
characters from the original, like, black and white cartoon that reprise their roles, you know, 15, 20 years later.
Yeah, I'm familiar with its pedigree and everything. It's something I've always meant to see. So that's pretty exciting. I'm going to have to get that. That's cool.
Yeah, there definitely were, like, you know, a string of those, like, darker sequels in OAV form in the 90s where this time you get to see blood and boobies. And I am 100% for, you know, those things.
Oh, it's the, this is the Kishern sins of the 90s.
It's the Kishan Robot Hunter of the 90s.
Gotcha.
That's the one. Kishern Sins is, you know, 2000s.
Oh, I gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
You're like, they did one of those.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like,
All right, cool. All right. Well, thanks for letting us know. That's awesome. We'll make sure that's in the show notes and that gets out to the news team. Okay, guys. Well, that wraps us up. Thanks a lot.
Okay, awesome.
Great to be here, as always.
Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to Mike and Daryl for stopping by. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us a rating or a review. We'd really appreciate it. And I'll see you all next week.